The agenda might look long, but it's not long. It's very short. I know that it's Friday. No one enjoys sitting in a committee beyond 12 o'clock on a Friday. I'll try my best to be as quick as possible. We have two items on the program. The first item is a referral from Parliament to ourselves. That is an agreement between the government of South Africa and the government of the Republic of Malta. As you know that when we deal with agreements between ourselves and other countries, there will always be some items that have to be referred to ourselves for approval from ourselves and to Parliament. Advocate Jacobs is here, who will lead us into this agreement. I believe that it's going to be very short. It's something similar to what we did, I think, about 3 weeks ago or last month, when we had the same document that we had to do on the agreement between ourselves and those countries. And then the second item is the DDA reports from the ICD, all those outstanding reports that we were supposed to have dealt with some time back. We will deal with those three reports today. I would also like to apologize to members for receiving the documents late. It's the same documents as the documents that we were supposed to have done a while ago, with some few amendments, of course. So they will quickly take us through, starting with the July to December 2005 up to the last one, which is June 2007. But we will start with Advocate Jacobs in order for us to release him, because yours is very short, and then we'll start with the ICD. As usual, I will ask members to just to make a short introduction, and then the ICD, EG and his team will also introduce his team, and then that's it. Starting with you, Comrade Kennedy.
Thanks, Chairperson. I'm Dumisile Ntlengese, a member of the Portfolio Committee, deployed as a week.
Member of the committee.
Benjamin Dooley, member of the committee.
I don't know what is happening, because I don't see other parties here, and 90% of 99.9 is ANC. Seems as if we are the only people who are very concerned about domestic violence, because I see only Honorable King here, who is also will be leaving very soon, and from there we turn it into an ANC fix, and it was very tabulating, of course. You see, it's our own party, our own everything. We'll dance and do everything. No one's going to say anything. We'll be in charge of the ANC. And myself too, I won't be supposed to be neutral. I won't be neutral today, because I'll be a member of the ANC, doing ANC thing. Politics ANC, no one's going to challenge us today here. Only ANC members here. Can I give over to EG to introduce first?
Thanks, Honorable Chair and Members. Patrick Mongwe, the Acting Executive Director of the ICD.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Moses Lamini. I'm at the ICD.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Nonsanda Sishizana. I'm also from ICD Head Office.
All right, let us just start immediately.
Others are staff, E.T. and Jeremy, and the gentleman over there.
Yeah. And you are not honorable. But the mother, staff member over there.
So we'll start then with you, Advocate Jacob. Can I give over to you to start?
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, as you've rightly said, this agreement is similar to a number of other agreements that we have tabled in Parliament on police cooperation, especially the recent one on the United Arab Emirates, as well as the agreement we dealt with last year on Uganda. Madam Chair, with your permission, I think it will assist us if I just go quickly through the process that we follow when we negotiate these agreements. Madam Chair, they are normally initiated or proposed via the diplomatic channel, via Department of Foreign Affairs, who informs the SAPs for the need expressed from a particular country and the benefits of an agreement with a specific country. And those benefits could be not always just of an operational police nature, but it could also be in terms of the international relations of our country. The SAPs will then consult with stakeholders in the department as well as other relevant departments, and obtain authorization from the National Commissioner and the Minister to proceed with negotiations. Once a final text for the agreement has been negotiated, the procedures set out in Chapter 5 of the Manual on Executive Acts of the President and Section 231 of the Constitution has to be followed. Briefly, this procedure involves an opinion on the agreement's consistency with domestic law to be obtained from the State Law Advisors at the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development, an opinion on the agreement's consistency with international law and South Africa's international obligations to be obtained from the State Law Advisors, International Law at the Department of Foreign Affairs. A President's minute must be prepared by the responsible government department for signature by both the responsible line function cabinet minister and the President. The documents are also scrutinized by the legal advisors to the Presidency before signature by the President. The President's minute, a short explanatory memorandum, together with two copies of the agreement, is forwarded to the State Law Advisors for certification in accordance with the prescribed procedures, and then presented to the President for signature. After presidential approval has been obtained, the agreement is bound by the treaty section of the Department of Foreign Affairs, and then signed by the President and his counterpart in the relevant country. In most instances, however, the President authorized a specific minister, sometimes the Minister of Foreign Affairs, as was the case with this Malta agreement, who then signs the agreement on behalf of the President. After signing, the agreement is deposited with the treaty section for safekeeping. Normally, police cooperation agreements are regarded as technical administrative agreements in terms of Section 2313 of the Constitution. It binds the Republic once signed and entered into force once signed, but it must be tabled in both houses of Parliament within a reasonable time. Madam Chair, just as a short background, the present formal presentation is an updated presentation that we had on the Uganda agreement, Madam Chair, where we stressed the need for cooperation in terms of globalization and different crime threats in terms of organized crime especially, as well as terrorism. At the moment, we have multilateral agreement with all 12 countries in Southern Africa, and then other agreements with Austria, Brazil, Argentina, Bulgaria, Chile, People's Republic of China, Portugal, the Russian Federation, Rwanda, Turkey, Uganda, and the United Arab Emirates. Madam Chair, last time we pointed out that at one stage, some countries only requested cooperation in respect of drugs, but the National Commissioner and the Minister has expressed their desire that in future we should focus on general police cooperation agreements, which actually addresses all forms of crime and all types of cooperation, rather than limited types of agreements just focused on crime or terrorism or whatever. Madam Chair, we are in the process of negotiations with some 10 other countries 10 agreements that are still in the pipeline. This one does not really deviate in any instance from the other agreements. The competent authorities are the South African Police Service and the Malta Police Force, respectively, and the areas of cooperation, corruption and organized crime, trafficking in firearms, drugs, economic crimes, money laundering, forgery of documents including counterfeit currency, trafficking in stolen goods and trafficking in persons. Madam Chair, I can just mention that the negotiations on this agreement started already in 1998 and texts were exchanged, but recently the Minister of Foreign Affairs paid a visit to Malta and the opportunity was grasped to finalize the agreement. We recently had instances where 419 scams and lotto scams, which impacted also in South Africa, emanated from Malta, which is an indication that there is organized crime activities, which of course is also always good for South Africa to have agreements in terms of which we can address issues like terrorism and organized crime in a more streamlined fashion. Madam Chair, in terms of the contents, it's to cooperate in aspects relating to public order policing, technical research, training of staff and crime prevention, to cooperate on issues relating to terrorism. The agreement, however, does not apply to extradition and mutual legal assistance because those issues are administered by the Department of Justice. Other issues are the exchange of information and working experience, exchange of criminal information, the exchange of information on legislation, exchange of literature to assist with researching of missing persons and suspects at large, and requests must be in writing through the competent authorities. Cooperation may be refused if it's deemed detrimental to the sovereignty, security, public order or essential interests of the state, or if it poses an excessive burden upon the state or its resources. This would be if the request would exceed normal budgetary implications regarding international cooperation. Refusal will normally take place after consultation. There are limitations in terms of the agreement on the use of information that is provided in terms of the agreement. Documents and information exchange in execution of the agreement must be protected if restricted or if the competent authority disapproves of its disclosure. In terms of the Promotion of Access to Information Act, one of the exclusions in that act relates to international obligations, and so we have the mechanism in terms of our law to enforce this exception. Documents and information so obtained may only be used for purposes for which it has been provided, and no disclosure of documents and information to third parties without prior consent of the other party. The expenses, ordinary expenses, expenses incurred in processing a request shall be borne by the requested party unless otherwise agreed upon. Madam Chair, as I've said, the state law advisor has advised as well that this is a technical agreement which in terms of Section 231 of the Constitution binds the Republic once signed on behalf of the President, but it must be tabled in Parliament in both houses. Thank you, Madam Chair. That is all.
Thank you very much, Advocate Jacob. Tell me why do I have so many presentations? How can you say thank you while I still have something here? What is this? You want to spoil my Friday? Thank you very much, Advocate Jacob. Members, that's the short agreement that we are entering into South Africa with Malta.
Just three small questions. The first is, I might have missed it, but when was this agreement entered into? Second thing is, in terms of the contents of the agreement, I see there's a reference to trafficking in persons. How are we going to oblige to that agreement without legislation dealing with trafficking in persons? The reason why I'm asking this question, I don't want us to find ourselves in a situation where we embarrass at some point in time because we don't have the legislation and there's a need from their side or something like that. And Yeah, but that was the two questions. Thanks, Chair.
Secretary Allah, did you raise your hand? And Mr. Chabu, go ahead.
Thank you, Madam. Number two, I would like to know whether the agreement between the SAPS ministers and stakeholders on the proceeding negotiations, is any time frame for that? Thank you.
Thank
you. Thank you,
Benji, did you raise your hand?
Yes.
It's Ben. No, there were no problems. Okay.
What I think the presenter did indicate that if I heard him well, say that there wouldn't be financial implications. But I'm interested in that. I want to find out to say, you know, I think just citing an example of where we come from in June when we're doing the border patrol, just not border monitoring, just to say oversight. What, for example, we noticed that South Africa and Mozambique, I'll take that as an example. I'm sure there should be some agreement, cooperation to say, you know, we'll quell problems of theft and so on and so forth like this. But when we're on our own borders now, we did check and in South Africa on our side, there was an initiative you could see, even the roads, that physically our roads were, our borders were being maintained, monitored on our side. But on the other side, there was virtually nothing. Now, to me, it's a bilateral agreement that, to me, it should benefit us and that other country. Now, the good intentions that are declared through this memo, Randolph Alexander, is that both countries are indeed saying, be it human trafficking, be it what drug problems, so on and so forth, will both, you know, on our side play a role. But what I then observe is that that doesn't necessarily become the case. And it doesn't become the case so because there isn't a proper costing to it. It is assumed that, yes, we agree, then we will do it. But I think, to me, as part of the coining of the agreement, is the costing that is necessary for by both sides to say we'll put X, Y resources, you put X, Y resources, as part of, so that it becomes a worthwhile paper to be entered to, so that even also if you're assisting evaluation, you can say after 3 years, or you can benchmark it, say, have we achieved the papers through the agreement, the bilateral that we have, this country? But as it is now, it looks just looks like ceremonial, just an occasion where we sign documents, say, okay, they are there. We'll see whether they are weak or what. It's just another thing. That's the point I wanted to make sure.
Thank you very much, Honorable. Before I give to Honorable Daniel, I just wanted to add on what you were saying, especially about our own borders here in South Africa. I'm sure that you were even referring to, I think it's Swaziland. Yeah, it was in Swaziland, where I think it was also, if not also, one of those, also of course, Bay, somewhere there, where there was a stolen vehicle, which was parked just 5 meters away from the border gate, in the other side, not in our side. They are looking for that car. They know that is the car that they're looking for. But there is no agreement that they can go there and confiscate that car. And we're even told that the officials from that side, they're even using that car for their own activities that side. They're using it. It has been stolen in South Africa. They know that is the car that you're looking for, but they can't confiscate that because there's no agreement between ourselves and those people. I'm sure that you were also asking on those bases, and also really financial implication. I have also concern about the financial. What kind are they doing? Because from our side, we say that we are well organized, but the problem is the other side. What is it that they are doing to assist us? Then I'll give to Matt Daniel.
I didn't hear properly what was said on the extradition, but also on administration, judiciary was mentioned. Mine is to understand what informs the extradition, or who informs it. Does the safety request that when it's needed, or judiciary just fills the need at that particular point?
I will give over to you to respond.
Madam Chair, thank you very much. The first question on when the agreement was signed, it was on the 4th of April this year. The memorandum for the tabling was sent through to the Minister on the 17th of May, and it was tabled given to the Speaker's office shortly thereafter. On the issue on trafficking in persons, Madam Chair, South Africa is also, despite the fact that we do not have specific legislation on trafficking in persons, which the Justice Portfolio Committee is still dealing with, South Africa is already party to the additional protocol to the Transnational Organized Crime Convention. So already we do have obligations in terms of combating the trafficking in persons. At the moment, I think you will know that it is being done by means of immigration legislation, which have its shortcomings in the sense that many times that type of legislation actually affects the victim as the person being arrested rather than the person who do the trafficking. I think we know what are all the shortcomings in terms of the present situation on the trafficking in persons. But we need to cooperate, especially where a country would provide information to us and ask us to follow that information up, which might link up to trafficking in that country. So we can assist countries, although we do not have the legislation in place. But I think it is very important what the member, the Honourable Ms. Van Laker said, that you know it is important that we have that legislation in place as soon as possible. But in the meantime, we do have international obligations, both in terms of Interpol and the protocols to the TOC Convention to combat trafficking in persons. Madam Chair, the second question related to the time frame. The agreement entered into force once it was signed on the 4th of April. It remains in force for a period of 5 years, whereafter it is automatically reviewed. However, South Africa may terminate the agreement if there is some pressing reason for that. The third question relates to the issue of drugs. Recently, we have tried, when we receive a request for a cooperation agreement on a specific issue like drugs, to negotiate to change that into an agreement. And normally we make a counter-proposal with our draft agreement that we normally use. And so far, our counterparts agreed to that. But I think it will very much depend on the type of country we deal with. If it's a South American country like Peru, where we are busy with negotiations at the moment, or Argentina or Brazil, where most of our policing and law enforcement problems lies on the area of drugs, if that country would insist and we would see that such an agreement will help us, I do not think we will refuse to do that. It is just that we prefer to do a general cooperation agreement because I think we all realize that terrorism can emanate in any country. And if you have that type of broader agreement, it will assist. Madam Chair, at the same time, I must say that we must remember that most of the countries in the world are part of the Interpol, which also provides for police cooperation, communication between police, the exchange of information, etc., etc. It is just that when you have this special relationship with this particular country, that it is easier to communicate and it is easier to cooperate in many ways. On the issue of financial implications, Madam Chair, I think it's very difficult in terms of when you conclude an agreement to really put the financial issue on the table. in the sense, as I said, there's normal Interpol cooperation that we have at any time with any number of countries. And it is difficult to foresee in a period of 4 years ahead what will the type of cooperation be. But I must say that we had a lot of benefit from some of these cooperation agreements in the particular country like France, where they have assisted a lot with training and have even funded a lot of the training that has been done in South Africa. And that is why we can't put a price on it up front. Because every year those countries also have budgets in terms of where they determine how they can assist other countries and what they can make available. But Madam Chair, I think the issue relating to the funding and the budget on our neighboring countries, that is the most important one. We do have special relationships in terms of our neighboring countries. Apart from the Interpol cooperation, apart from the SARCO agreement, which relates to all 12 countries in the Southern African region from Tanzania southwards, we do have joint national commissions with Mozambique. There's a joint national commission with Zimbabwe, with Namibia, and as well as with Botswana. And within that joint national commission, not only the police service, but also the intelligence and defense, from time to time meet and discuss common issues relating to the borders. That can include crime, it can include intelligence matters, etc., as well as defense matters, border patrols, etc. And specifically on those forums, more direct attention is given to the particular problems we have with our neighboring countries. As well, within the Southern African region, Madam Chair, and maybe if there's a need, sometime we can brief the committee particular on the work that SARCO has been done. I think the committee has heard about a lot of the issues through time. But this SARCO agreement between the 12 countries, although it's a multilateral agreement, it also has a bilateral effect. So we can use that agreement to address issues with a particular country, or we can have joint operations with a number of countries within the region. Madam Chair, and within SARCO, of course, there's the Permanent Coordinating Committee, which consists of the detective heads of all 12 countries. There's the Training Subcommittee, which addresses training, and the Legal Subcommittee addressing legal issues. Now, SARCO has an annual general meeting, and between that, all these committees meet from time to time. They do joint operations. They address this border patrol issues, the fencing issues on the border, etc. And Madam Chair, that agreement is one that we took through Parliament. We didn't sign it before Parliament has approved it, because we foresee that within the Southern African context, the interaction on police level would be much more intense, like other countries where you might have interaction once or twice or three times a year, requests for information, maybe a training initiative here or there. And through time, the expenses that we incur within the SARCO process has actually been worked into the police budget, in especially training. There are training programs which are set up front for a year, where people from the whole of Southern Africa come to South Africa, where South African police service members go to those countries, and where we have joint training, where the needs are really are, especially with vehicle theft, stock theft, and firearms. And you all know about the shell operations, which is also done in terms of that multilateral cooperation agreement. Madam Chair, the question you asked about the confiscation also relates to the last question. Once you need exhibits that are in another country, or you need to formally gather evidence in another country, the processes are prescribed in terms of South Africa on the Mutual Assistance in Criminal Matters Act, which is administered by the Department of Justice. And Madam Chair, in short, it boils down to the fact that whenever you need legal processes to obtain certain information or evidence, then you need to follow the legal process that country's law would require. And I think the fact that we have different legal systems has been a big problem, especially with motor vehicles. In some countries, you can even pay bail for a car that has been seized by the police until the court has decided on that specific case. Then you have the issue of innocent buyer, a person who buys this car is not at all knowledgeable that the car has been stolen. And the legal positions do differ in different countries. But Madam Chair, through time and through the forum of SARCO, the retrieval of vehicles has improved a lot. Although I don't want to say it has everything been solved, but it is one of the focus areas. And we must remember as well that it's very difficult to incur huge expenses for the thefts to simply retrieve vehicles for insurance companies. And the problem that we have in many instances, you know, the vehicle has been stolen. The person from whom it has been stolen has received his money from the insurance. He's not very much interested to go and testify in another country to have that court case settled. So the onus comes down to the insurer or to the bank who held the loan for the car, etc. But we are interacting with all those role players in order to further that process. The same with extradition. It is to designate a country in terms of the Extradition Act requires long processes where inter alia they look at the type of legal system in a country before an extradition agreement would be entered into. And as I've said, those processes are being managed by the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development. Most of the countries in Southern Africa, we have already extradition agreements with, or they have been designated in terms of the Extradition Act, because in terms of the Commonwealth scheme for extradition, you have both methods. You can either designate a country or you can conclude an agreement with it. But as well, not with all of the countries in Southern Africa. And that's an ongoing process between the Department of Justice and the respective countries on concluding those agreements or reciprocally designating each other in terms of that act. And I'm sure I think I have addressed all the questions.
Thank you very much, Advocate Jacob. Members, I think that's the response from SAPS. I think we did our part, we understand, and I am happy that at least this time members don't just agree on each and everything that is being presented to them as it used to be. We are very conscious about, especially when it comes to the finances. We don't want to see you coming back and saying that the finances to run all this was said here is from the visible policy, and then that's the reason why we really needed to ask you this question without saying. I think we can release the advocate because we are satisfied with this and thumbs up for this from us as Parliament, and we'll follow then the necessary process. Thank you very much to you. Thanks, Commander. I'm sorry that we had to call you on a Friday. I know it's not a very nice day to call a person down to get us.
No problem. Thank you very much,
ma'am. Thank you very much. We'll then move over then to the domestic violence report. These reports, members, are those reports that we were supposed to have received a while ago, and there was that misunderstanding between ICD ministry and ourselves. And the reports are here today, and we were supposed also to have the departments on their part. But I requested Jeremy to postpone the one for the department for next week Wednesday when they are here for their annual report. Instead of them coming to Cape Town today and then to Cape Town again next week. We'll deal with, I want us to deal with the very first one. That is the 2005. Just in 2005. Do you remember the copies? Yeah. We'll deal with the... Where's the date here?
this is the presentation. I want these are four different reports. These are four different reports. July to December 2005, January to June 2006, July to December 2006, January to June 2004. Are they all in one document? We are not dealing with that thing. We want to deal with this thing. We want to deal with this thing. That one we did receive copies, we read for on our own. And then we raise questions when we deal with your annual report on those ones. Today we only want to take the presentation. That's right. Remember, it's written like this. On the screen. There is it on the screen. Yeah. Yeah. And do you know about the police or not? Okay. Okay. All right, then, it seems as if they are all in one here. Fine, but Jeremy did distribute the original booklet to all members so that you can take your time going through those, so that when we deal with their annual report, which is will be on the... When is that, Jeremy? Sometime next month, November. But we have changed the date for the presentation for the ICD. Let me just, before they say they didn't know that they were supposed to come to Cape Town, let me just, we have changed it, as I have indicated to you, EV, yesterday, that we might change this program. Because experience has taught us that it is not possible to do all programs in one day, especially when it comes to finances. It's then we decided yesterday that we're going to split your hearings. We'll take one and two, program one and program two. Those are going to take on Friday, the 2nd of November, which is next week. We'll take program one and two, which is administration and travel of progress, eh? And then on the 14th of November we will take then program 3, which is the very same program that we are doing now, and also and the finances on the 14th of November. Yeah. That's how I'm going to split it, because I'm avoiding a waste of resources for all program managers to come down to Cape Town just to find out that we couldn't do the whole annual report. Then we'll then split it into two. All right, without any waste of time, then let me give over to you, then take us through this report.
Thanks, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members of the Committee. And I heard the chairperson very well that it's Friday, and it's appropriate that we indeed speed up the process, but without shortchanging what we are here for. As ICD, we really thank you again for even giving us this opportunity to come and do the presentation before you. And I have to emphasize that our previous engagement was not fruitless, because we really seized the opportunity to improve over our presentation as directed today. And with due respect to the members of this committee, I'm of the view that indeed true success is built on the trials and errors and the courage to stand up and continue with the journey despite the stumbling and the falling down. We highly value your intervention and your guidance offered by this committee. So we beg you that please do not get tired of us yet and give up on us. There is just no room for undermining domestic violence. And the promulgation and the implementation of the Domestic Violence Act proved to be one giant step forward in the fight against violence against women and children. And the ICD, indeed, is playing its role as legislated. Despite some shortcomings there and there, we always strive to comply with the law by making sure that we indeed submit reports to Parliament regarding the number and particulars of matters reported to us in terms of Section 4A, setting out the recommendation made in respect of such matters. The most important challenging matter faced by the ICD in this regard, honourable members of the committee, is that other than disclosing to Parliament that there are some misconduct being committed by some members of the SAPS, and we have made disciplinary recommendation to the police management to implement our recommendation. What is important, however, is what do the police management do with the recommendation made by the ICD? That is very important. And if they are not doing anything, indeed, we are at the mercy of this honorable committee to push them to do something. And as an institution, there are some initiatives which we have taken to further the goals of the domestic violence, such as we have established now a relationship with the NGO who deals with the matters here in the Western Cape, the Western Cape Mosaic, and in Gauteng we have a relationship with Genderlink. We have undertaken a research project recently in order to go to the deep root of the cause of domestic violence by some members of the SAP. And the two topics we are doing a research now is a femicide by the police, where spouses are being killed, and the non-compliance of the SAPs on the domestic violence. We hope these findings will assist in combating this kind of violence. It is our resolution to do more in this regard, to make sure that every police station is audited regularly when it comes to domestic violence register and compliance, by deploying on regular basis assistant investigators who will be having policing powers also. I am happy to confirm to the honourable members of this House that our honourable minister, Charles Magula, has approved the restructuring process of the ICD on the 4th of September 2007. And the result after the implementation of this restructuring will take the existing 75 investigators to about 110 from within without recruiting outside. There is, however, not going to be any negative impact on the individuals being affected, except that they will reap some benefit from this program. And as of today's presentation, honorable members, we will try as much as possible to present to the honorable members the instruments as directed, and as always, we'll accept wholeheartedly the guidelines and advices you give us. I thank you very much, and I'll hand over to my managers.
Thank you very much, Iggy. It's very interesting to hear that the new structure or the restructuring has been approved by the minister. Can we get a copy of that proposed structure?
I would do so.
We are very interested because that's actually the effort of this committee. Because we've been saying that provinces are not well equipped when it comes to investigators. So we are very interested to know that per province, what will happen in future because of this approval. What impact, what difference is going to make if we can get a copy of that structure that has been approved by the minister. All right, then, over to you.
Thank you, Chairperson, and honorable members of the Parliament. Good morning. Our presentation is going to be done by two people. I'm going to cover the types of non-compliance, what ICD does, non-compliance or intake, and then my colleague will take us through in terms of the statistics. And then I'll also look at the station audit covering all the period. The period that I'm going to look at, it will be from July to December 2005, January to June 2006, July to December 2006, and also January to June 2007. But Chairperson, I just wanted to let you know that the January to June 2007 has not yet been tabled. We are waiting for the minister for his final approval. But I thought maybe for the benefit of the members of this committee, let us present it, although it, as I've just indicated, that it still needs to be tabled.
No, we are not going to take that if it has not been tabled. Yes, you must follow the Parliament procedure.
Okay.
Yeah, because it must be referred to ourselves by Parliament.
Okay. So if it's not tabled yet, so that means it's not with us yet.
Okay.
So I think we need not to do that one. We'll only do the referrals one, the one that has been referred to our friends.
Okay, then thank you, Chairperson. Then it means you look at July to December 2005, January up to December 2006. And then I will also touch on the challenges and then priorities 2007 and 2008. Thank you. The type of non-compliance. The DVA report presents a factual analysis of cases of non-compliance with the DVA by members of the SAPS and the recommendations made to address same. And the type of cases of non-compliance with the DVA addressed in these reports include, first, failure to effect warrant of arrest, failure to advise compliance of options, failure to assist compliance to open cases, failure to refer the victim to a place of safety, failure to seize firearms, and failure to set protection orders. And then our role as ICG is to investigation of non-compliance, referral for investigation or disciplinary action, conducting DVA audits and self-inspection, processing applications for exemption, awareness campaigns, and conducting workshops with SAPS members. Then the first episode that we're going to cover, as I've indicated, will be from January to December 2005, and I'll allow my colleague to cover the statistics. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair, Honourable Members. We, from this slide, we can see the numbers of non-compliance cases that the ICD has dealt with, the same numbers that are in the report that were tabled in Parliament. You can see there that during the period January to June 2005, the cases, a total of 76 cases of non-compliance, and Gauteng accounted for the most number, 22, and then the Western Cape. Other provinces like the Northwest also accounted for a significant number, whereas Eastern Cape, KwaZulu-Natal and Mpumalanga accounted for a lower number. The period July to December 2005, Eastern Cape only had one case, whereas the picture changed now in the Free State. You can see they went from 3 cases in the first 6 months to 17 cases in the next 6 months. Gauteng also, the picture changed there from 22 to 9 cases. The Northwest, the situation was not really much changed. One case difference, and the Western Cape, the situation changed there. In terms of, now we're looking at January to June 2005 and the specific cases of non-compliance during that period. You will see there that of the 2 cases in the Eastern Cape, these were made up of failure to assist the complainant, such as assisting the complainant to find shelter, to access medical treatment. Whereas in Gauteng, for instance, you see that the biggest number of cases related to the failure to effect the arrest of the respondent. This is a huge challenge in the sense that in many instances the police feel that they perhaps can mediate these kinds of cases and therefore are reluctant to arrest perpetrators, and even when there's a threat of violence. And that is what you see there. With regards to failure to advise the complainant of options, here we're talking about advising the complainant that they can open a criminal case where they've been assaulted, that they can access a place of shelter, they can be accompanied to remove their belongings to be put in a more secure circumstance there. And a number of other issues. There was one case in Gauteng where the police failed to confiscate a firearm, and this particular case actually involved a member of the police who was the perpetrator of violence. And the colleagues were reluctant to disarm the member, even though there was that threat. But from this, these numbers, what you can observe that the biggest category of cases of non-compliance relates to the failure to effect arrest of the respondent. The next big number relates to the failure to assist the complainant. They say, instead of saying, how can we assist you, can we assist you to go to a doctor because you've been assaulted, they will say, oh, you've got family, why don't you call your family? Or you can negotiate, you can talk to your husband, you know, and sort this thing out. And then the breakdown, the totals at the bottom show you the numbers of cases per province. In Gauteng, for instance, the total number of cases would be 22, 11 in the Northwest, and so on. This particular slide presents the same kind of information, but also shows you the proportions that almost 60% of the cases related to the failure to effect arrest of the respondent, 18% failure to assist the complainant to access a place of shelter, medical treatment, and other facilities. Let me also add that with regards to this particular matter, say in certain areas the police face a challenge. They are not really to blame in failing to assist people to access a place of shelter because there is none. There may not be a place of shelter in the area, so there is nothing they can do. But the complainant will come and complain and say they were not assisted. And in that instance, the police, in cases of non-compliance, are required to then apply to the ICD for an exemption. Then we process it, and then if there is a reasonable explanation, such as that there is no place of shelter in the area, we will grant them an exemption from prosecution, which means that there is no need for any disciplinary action to be taken against members in those particular instances. Here, the proportions are there. I will not really go into more detail. And now, with regards to the July to December period, you will see that in the Free State there were 11 cases of failure to effect the arrest of respondents, and in Gauteng there was also 8 cases, whereas in other provinces the numbers were much smaller. And nothing in the Northern Cape, and one case in the Eastern Cape. Another matter here, in both periods, you will note that the biggest categories are failure to effect arrest, as well as the failure to assist the complainant, because those are the most prevalent complaints of non-compliance that we deal with. Although, as you can see in the matter of KwaZulu-Natal, the 5 cases there relating to failure to open a criminal docket are a challenge here and there. This is also serious situations where there is a threat of violence, where perhaps the complainant has been assaulted seriously, and there is a need to open a criminal case against the perpetrator, and the police would say, no, this is a family matter, they just refer to the elders, or in certain areas refer to the elders, or elders in the family or elders in the village, in village situations. So the seven cases that we see there are concerned. There is always a challenge in terms of determining what is actually serious. I'm sure that honorable members will have different views in terms of what is serious with regards to this nature of non-compliance that we've presented here. We picked up this when we conducted workshops with the police. They had different views. Some areas they said, no, it's not necessary to deal with the domestic violence matters as we do, as prescribed by the law, the legislation, as well as the national instructions. We should actually try and mediate. And others say, no, they must be dealt strictly in terms of what the law prescribes. Again here, in terms of the total numbers, you will see that the highest number was in the Free State, 17 cases, the Northwest, 12 cases, and Eastern Cape, 1 case. Let me also add that most of these cases, we became aware of them because complainants contacted us. There may be a situation that the police are not informing us as we are required to, that there are such cases of of domestic violence and non-compliance that is perpetrated by the members. It varies from area to area. With regards to the proportions of cases, this particular slide shows the numbers again. You will note that the failure to effect the arrest of the respondent is the biggest proportion there, almost 57%. And then also the failure to assist the complainant, 20%. And then the next category here, which is significant, perhaps it's the failure to open a criminal docket, relative to the other numbers, of course. I don't know, Chairperson, if we have another two slides towards the end of the presentation where we've shown the disposal of such cases, the numbers of exemptions granted, which we added later. I don't know if
I should go through all the non-compliance up to December 2006.
Okay. Thank you, Chair. Now, with regards to January to June 2006, the total number is 46 cases. The biggest proportions happening in Gauteng and the Western Cape. Yeah, it's January to December. If you look at the first column, or the second column, it's January to June. And the next column is January to December. The second column, Chairperson, is January to June. Yeah. With regards to this here, Western Cape and Gauteng got equal numbers of complaints. Northern Cape and the Eastern Cape, 5 cases each. KwaZulu-Natal and Mpumalanga got 1 case each. What we're trying to determine, Chairperson, is that in KwaZulu-Natal, there seems to be an anomaly there because their numbers are quite
quite low. It's also part of this research that we're conducting to find out what is happening there. July to December, 55 cases in total, 12 in the Free State. We saw the peaks. We're still trying to determine also what accounts for the one such a low number in the 1 month in the first period, and then it goes up a bit in the next period. Northwest, though, the provincial head has done quite a bit of work in ensuring that we have workshops and engage the police in terms of the reporting of cases of non-compliance. The other provinces, of course, they're also engaging their counterparts in the police to improve the reporting of the non-compliance and also the processing of those kinds of cases. With regard to January to June, honorable members, again, Western Cape and Gauteng, 11 or 12 cases and 11 cases respectively. The biggest category there again is the arrest of respondents. Now, here, let me also add, I think there is also the possibility that members of the public expect the police to act immediately when there is domestic violence. They expect the police to go and arrest the perpetrator. And that is why perhaps that number is big. And also, if you look at the opening of a criminal docket there in the Northwest, 3 cases and in total, 6 cases, Chairperson. The totals at the bottom are a grouping of the provincial numbers. Again, let me indicate the proportions here. You'll note that in the period that we've discussed, most of the failure to effect the arrest tend to be above 50% and above. So that is the majority of the cases that we have dealt with in terms of non-compliance. Failure to assist, again, 10.9, and then the opening of failure to open criminal docket is again the 13%. This one, Chairperson, you said we will not deal with it because it's not referred to the committee yet. Can I just quickly skip to this one? July to December. You will note there again, out of the 55 cases that we dealt with during this period, that 37 cases were the failure to effect arrest. And now, here's another different dimension here. The failure to serve a subpoena or a protection order on the respondent, wherein the police, once a person has got a protection order or a subpoena, they say to the complainant, go and give it to your husband who assaulted you. Now this person is a victim. It's difficult to understand how that person could be expected to go and serve a protection order or a subpoena. But if you look at these are from province to province. Overall, it's 9 cases, but if you look at specifically in each province, it's 2 cases in the Free State, 2 in KwaZulu-Natal, and 2 in the Northern Cape. Let me also add that in terms of what we indicated earlier, the police, with regards to non-compliance cases, they are required to apply for exemption from prosecution or to take disciplinary action against the members. Now, where the ICD grants the exemption, then that member it means that there's no need to take disciplinary action against the member. We'll take you through also those kinds of numbers, Chairperson. Again, here it's more or less the same picture. Biggest number, failure to effect arrest, and then the failure to serve a protection order or subpoena on the respondent. Those are the big numbers. So I will skip this one, January to June 2007, and take you through the applications for exemption. Let me apologize, Chairperson, that you don't have this particular slide in your handout. But I'll take you through quickly. Yes. The applications for exemption, during this period, we dealt with 38. First, Chairperson, let me say it's difficult to even get the police to apply for exemption. We actually become aware of these cases, and then we have to go to the police and say, you know that in terms of the Act and the national instructions, you must actually take disciplinary action against this member. Or apply for exemption, providing reasons why the member should not be charged. And then in many instances, the police will say, but it's not a serious matter, you know. There's no need. We will not even apply to the ICD for exemption. In some instances, out of ignorance, that is what is required of them. But in some instances, it's just blatant disregard. Here we actually went to the police and said, you must apply for exemption, and then we consider the cases on their merits. And 38, during the period January to June 2005, 38 applications for exemption were granted. The yes means the exemptions were granted. The no means they were not granted, therefore the police were required to take disciplinary action against those members. July to December, well, the biggest number here, before I go to July to December, you'll notice that it's in the Western Cape, there were 11 applications for exemption that were granted, whereas in Gauteng there were 10. In Limpopo, if you look, the balance between those that were granted and those that were denied fell to those that were denied because the reasons given were not sufficient. In the Free State, they were both granted. Whereas in the Eastern Cape, both applications were denied because it was felt that the members should be disciplined. They did not have sufficient reasons not to have complied. During the period July to December, you see that in the Free State, 10 applications were granted and 5 were denied. So where an application for exemption is denied, they must automatically take disciplinary action. The challenge we face, of course, is that the disciplinary process goes on and on and on and on, and it never gets finalized, or that it never even happens to begin with. Well, with regards to January to June 2006, you know today that 28 applications were granted and 6 were denied. Now, what does this tell you, Chairperson and Honorable Members, that in many instances, even though we face challenges, the police may actually have valid reasons for not complying because of the reasons that I've mentioned. For instance, if there is no place of shelter, there is no way that they can offer somebody shelter. But also, part of the of the circumstances that we must also look at is that even though there is training, it's still a challenge. Training. Many members will, Mr. Chairman, will take you through the audits. You will find that in a police station, there is no, the members have not been trained or they are new, those who deal with domestic violence. They've been moved from another police station. In the past, they've never been exposed to domestic violence training. But of course, that is not an excuse. We expect them to know. But there are many and varied challenges. It also goes to the way in which the management in the police take this matter, the seriousness with which they take it. If I may move to the next slide, Chairperson. This one relates to the findings made upon investigation of the cases. Here you will note that 50 cases, 11.4% were substantiated. Substantiated means that there was a basis for the complaint. Unsubstantiated means that maybe there was a basis, but there was not sufficient evidence for us to come to another conclusion. Dismissed means that your complainant, for instance, may not have cooperated with us to be able to finalize the matter, and therefore, because these kinds of cases, there's also a huge problem with complainants. Sometimes they talk to their spouses and partners, and then tomorrow they're not interested in pursuing the matter. So we need statements to continue and find that we don't get those. Dismissed cases, 8.2%. And then there are those that are withdrawn. The 42 cases there. And then those that are made unfounded, just somebody says, the police did not help me, whereas there is no such thing. The police actually did help the person. So it's a false allegation. And there are those that were resolved, Chairperson, 50%, where it could have been just a misunderstanding between the complainant and the police. I find that when you bring the two parties together, or the police are alleged to not have done something, and then when you inquire, you get the police side of the story, and then you explain to the complainant what the police have done, and perhaps we take over the docket and look at it and establish the facts, and then the complain and say, well, I'm happy with what has been done, and the matter is resolved. I think that concludes my part of the presentation. Ms. Sihlezana will take it through. I don't know if we should take questions on the part that has been presented already, Chair.
Thank you very much. What's the surname again?
Dlamini.
Ah, thanks very much, Mr. Dlamini. I'm sure members were listening attentively when you were giving this report. But in some instances, we looked at you, especially when you spoke about the Eastern Cape non-compliance. You can't comply on something that does not exist. Domestic violence does not exist in the stations. We are from the Eastern Cape. There's nothing like domestic violence in the police station. So non-compliance of what? Of nothing. Because they don't even understand when you talk about domestic violence, what is that you're talking about? They'll get an hour before they can get e-register in the station. Or somebody has taken it home, or somebody has taken it to lunch, something like that, you know. So when you spoke about domestic violence, it's hard to, you know, it's cruel, same thing about domestic violence. I was listening to these challenges that you have enlisted here. I was reading through whilst you were making a presentation. Because this is exactly what we came across as members of parliament when we visit the station. The police don't understand what they're doing. And when you tell them that they don't understand, they seem not to agree with us. But it seems as if you agree with us that they don't understand. And the quality of training that they are receiving on the domestic violence, It's a serious challenge. I will come with a suggestion, because I see this document for the first time, the audit one. I don't know whether you guys did receive it. I see it for the first time, and it's quite a lengthy document with information and news about. And usually when we deal with documents like this, it's very difficult to do presentation on it as it is now. So the best thing that I would propose for this document, before I give questions to members, is for members to go through this document, this audit. And then when the lady is here for her annual report on the domestic violence, because she's coming back with the domestic violence annual report, and then we can then engage this document in a way of raising our questions and our concerns arising from this document. Because even for me here, as a person who's presiding over this, it's difficult for me to share to deal with this document if I haven't read the document through. I was just starting to read it, so there is a lot of information contained here. Some of the information you are familiar with, because we do this, for example, the issue of the silent sessions and all those things. And another thing is, again, I'm happy that you break these things into provinces, because the provincial heads of the ICT will be coming down on the ninth of November, where we'll have an opportunity then as members of parliament to ask them on issues like what I've just raised about the non-existence of the ICT in other provinces. They are just there in name. When you go to the police stations, they don't even know what animal that you're talking about when you talk about the ICD. So we thought, instead of frustrating you here as national, the best thing is for us to call them down to Cape Town so that they should respond to issues that affect them, the province. I know when you're a manager, it's very difficult to deal with people like police, actually. To deal with people like police, it's not a matter of not understanding the act. It's a matter of attitude in some instances. It's what we discovered in the portfolio committee. Now, if it's difficult for us to deal with them, we can just imagine then with the kind of resource that you have, then it's even more frustrating from your side. But we really appreciate the way the report is being presented to us, because it's open and transparent, and I can see that everything has been said just as it is. We've never had an opportunity of going through the whole process up to 2007. I went even up to 2007, and I agree 100% with issues that have been raised there. By so saying, then, if I will open to members then for
just the comments, the questions, the clarities and everything. And then that auditing part of your system, we are not going to deal with it now because they must have some to read it through and then come back then with some sort of questions and whatever. Yeah. I will open then to members. I recognize Ms. Shanyato, Ms. Van Veek, Ms. Daniel. Let's take those first three tests.
Thank you, Chairperson. On your priorities for 2007, you made mention of some awareness campaigns to communities and public of where to go when they are not being supported or assisted by police. I'm just worried on the table that you for other provinces said by the zero. For me, maybe it shows that where in these provinces said there is zero. And where there is zero non-compliance, it means that maybe there is no awareness. People don't know where to go and where to report. It's not that maybe those provinces are so much working or compliant. So I just want to check on these priorities. Are there any maybe joint programs with CPS and police even themselves on the awareness to the communities on maybe reporting on DVA and where to go. And also, Chairperson, on my second question, on your priorities again, you said you conduct a research study on domestic femicide and on first health contributing to non-compliance of subs on DVA. I just want the time frame. Where are you going to complete that research study? And also, Chairperson, you've made mention of some of the challenges. On the challenges, I also noticed that you said there's an increase of police officers who are perpetrators of domestic violence. I just want you maybe to explain, elaborate more. What are they doing as perpetrators of, police officers being perpetrators of domestic violence? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, yes, first a few comments, and I'm not talking about the presentation, I'm talking about the report itself. I think there's definitely room for improvement in the technical quality of the report. The technical quality of the reports are extremely low. You get, for instance, it's confusing as well. It's not clear in terms of what province are responsible for what, etc. And then, for instance, you would get in the 2006, January to July 2006, you would get in the Northern Cape section, you would get torture of children by police officers, rape in custody, etc., which got absolutely nothing to do with domestic violence and the Domestic Violence Act. So I think ICD needs to look at the quality of the reports. Just a general comment, I think it will assist them as well in terms of gathering the information and the actions that you are actually going to take. I mean, it's not acceptable that we refer to rape in custody and children, which is obviously complaints against police, which have nothing to do with the Domestic Violence Act. Chairperson, the issue of places of shelter as an excuse for police not complying with the Domestic Violence Act, I find a bit strange because every single police station at this stage is supposed to have a victim support centre. And those victim support centres are also supposed to be used as places of shelter for domestic violence victims. So that one, I think what is happening, and the feeling that I'm getting from going through the different reports as well, and it's maybe something that the ICD would like to take on board. I don't think your provinces are doing the inspections of the domestic violence register uniformly. I think they look at different things. I don't think they are looking at, you know, it might be good for you. You've got now got a research section, which we still have questions about what value they're adding to the ICD. But it might be useful for you guys to say to your research section, come up with a standard format of monitoring that must be completed when our people do the domestic violence inspections. Because it's clear from these reports that they're not doing a uniform approach when they do this. Again, I see you refer to the fact that you've got a shortage of staff to do these domestic violence inspections. I think, again, we would like to alert you to the fact that we've done previously as well, is make use of the people, if they go for something else to a station, that they actually, as part of being there, also have a look at the domestic violence compliance. Jefferson, the other thing that worries me a bit is the exemptions. There's no clear indication for us, and I think that comes back to the technical quality of the reports. There's no clear indication for us how much of these exemptions actually came from the police themselves, and how many of them were initiated by the ICD. Is ICD going back to them and saying, guys, you need to ask for exemption here? I think for us that's important information, because it indicates to us the compliance or non-compliance of the provinces to this. I must also say that as far as we are concerned, provinces with high cases of reporting is, as far as we are concerned, very positive, because from our inspections, we know that the police are not complying to the Domestic Violence Act. So I think, for instance, the fact that the Free State are coming out stronger in terms of number of cases that are reflected is a positive thing, it's not a negative thing. And I can also say to you that from our own experience, over and above what I said, what comes out from the report, it's from our own experience, I can also tell you that your provincial offices are looking at different things when they go to the stations in terms of the Domestic Violence Act. The ICD in KwaZulu-Natal accompanied us in our visit. If we take them and we compare, for instance, with Gauteng, when they're accompanying us to our visits, it's clear that the KwaZulu-Natal guys are focusing on something which the Gauteng guys are not focusing on. Also, I think it would be very important for us to have clear figures on the exemptions per province coming from the police. I'm basically repeating myself, but I think it's very important. Jefferson, there was also a mention made of the fact that some of these complaints that come in are because people expect the police to immediately arrest somebody in domestic violence act. I think that expectation is absolutely correct by the public. Domestic Violence Act is something that requires immediate arrest. It's not something that you can arrest a person 3 days afterwards, because you could have prevented violence if you did affect the arrest at the time of the complaint. So I think it's a valid expectation. And we mustn't allow the police to create excuses for them not complying to this act. Jefferson, I'm very glad that you didn't go through the 2007 figures, because we would have run into troubles. SAPS report and your report differs 100%. 100%. You guys are saying, for instance, that your figures for non-compliance that you give is 0.00. Theirs is 59. Now, I mean, somewhere, somebody again is giving us wrong information. I've got my own feeling of where it comes from. But we would have run into troubles again. I don't necessarily think it's the ICD. I think most probably the staff is lying to us again. Jefferson, I want to stress this point again. I think the ICD must have a sit down. If it means that they took God to talk to us on an informal basis about what kind of information we would like to see in these reports, they must do that. But I think the ICD needs to go and re-look your reports on domestic violence. You know, if justice should call you on this, and they might, I mean, they can do so if they want to. They're definitely not going to be satisfied with these reports, because it's not going to comply to what is necessary from the Act. And I think it would serve the ICD well to go and have sit down and say, let's look at the reports. How can we improve the reports? How can we provide guidelines to the province which will also make it easier for us when we compile these reports? That would be a firm suggestion, Jefferson, that I would like to make.
In our 2005 report, I think it was under Advocate McKenzie, when we dealt thoroughly with the ICD, when they had those challenges, serious challenges by the previous head. I think there was a suggestion from the committee that when we discovered that their style of working is not the same, that is from province to province. And then we advised them to exactly what we are saying, or to think of something like a workshop where you will take all the provincial heads and the managers of the program in one place from all provinces, and then so that they should have a similar understanding. I think last week when we were getting provincial reports from members, there was, of all the provinces that members visited, there was a strong feeling that KwaZulu-Natal was one of the best provinces, that they know what they are doing. You know, they know what they are doing, and we felt that if all provinces can follow the trend of KwaZulu-Natal, maybe that will take us somewhere. Although we are not saying that they are perfect, because we know that there are still very serious challenges in KZN when it comes to issues, Zama, sales and everything. But we felt that I was not in KwaZulu-Natal, and when I came back, I said that I think that the Free State, because I went to the Free State with some members, they know what they are doing. And then members met with me, and then we sat down. We all agreed that we think that KwaZulu-Natal is the people that we think that we need to follow. Like the restructuring of the police. When we decided on the restructuring of SAPS, is because it has already started then by Ruzwandi at the Western Cape. And then when we visited stations in the Western Cape, then we were wondering, why is the information or the communication so easy to flow from a station to the province? We discovered that instead of depending too much on the area, they were depending on something like a zone. It's when then we proposed that the police need to be restructured into something similar like that. So I wasn't in KZN, but the report that we received from KZN when it comes to the ICD, we thought maybe we should mention that you really need to sit down with all the heads and then try to come up with something which will be a uniform approach to Indaba ICD.
Quite. As well, I think it might also be that we were so, almost use swear word now, we were so dissatisfied with the Eastern Cape ICD that it might have been that we were over-impressed by KwaZulu-Natal.
Because you saw nothing.
Because Eastern Cape, we had a situation where police officers killed one person, shot three other persons on the Saturday, less than 8 kilometers from the ICD head office. And when we got to them on the Monday, they didn't even know about it happening, but it was all over the posters in the province. So, you know, it might be that we were so disappointed by the ICD in the Eastern Cape that we thought the equivalent in the dollars brilliant.
But I really agree with you, because if you started with Eastern Cape and then you went to KwaZulu-Natal, I'm sure you say KwaZulu-Natal is the best because we had nothing in the Eastern Cape. But all in all, what we are saying is we need to have a uniform approach on how to deal with reporting in the ICD. And also this issue of this research unit, I'm very interested to know what is it that is doing that is within the ICD, that research thing. Because when it was established or when it was planned, we were not in favor of that thing. Even together with the minister, we were not in favor of that thing. But somebody managed to maneuver through and establish that thing. It's fine, because if that thing was working very well, wouldn't have been faced by all these things that we are mentioning now. Because they would have done their research thoroughly and know exactly what is happening and come up with a mechanism of how to deal with
in the way reporting when it comes to the way ICD, especially from those provinces that you just mentioned. The next person on my list was Ms. Tanya.
I'm also in the learning care chair. But when I was looking at all these students, what ICT is partnering with communities, educating them in non-compliance. Something came up in my mind. Has the ICT had sort of partnering with the Department of Home Affairs in their family section? Because if you check, there are a number of domestic violence cases that are reported. One. And the clerks that are working there, is, to some extent, they know the law. But you found out, even if these protection orders have been issued, the perpetrators continue to inflict and people go to the police and police don't act and they go back and report government. And that only ends up with the clerk. It does not go back to the magistrate. And it ends up there. That's why in the estate case you find there's nothing that is happening. While domestic violence is happening. They have, even the clerks that are working in Kwamuke needs to be educated. What is it then supposed to be done? In educating the people, partnering with you, so that people must know when they go to the police station, they look at the name tag of the police, jot it down, the date when they went to the police station, so that when they go back, because they are left to go to the police, back to the police, when the police don't respond. They go back to the police and report that I'm a police and do help me, and then it ends up there. And that's why it's not documented. That's one other way that IPD should look at. Because in that department, there are a lot of domestic cases that are reported. And at the end of the day, by the time they go back to the court, that's a very good. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Chairperson. Analyst has asked this question, but I think I'll ask it differently. The issue of the shelter. If ICD knows that there are no shelters, why do they report it as non-compliant? What do they expect police to do when there is none? Secondly, Chairperson, the issue of public expecting police to arrest. I also expect police to arrest when there are such cases. I want to know, Chairperson, the first presenter talked about workshops with staff members. Do they make a follow-up that it doesn't only end to that category of members? Does it go down to ordinary members, especially those that maintain the CSC in the police station? Because that is where the problem is when you visit police stations. They don't know how to fill it in. They don't know where it is. They don't know how to control it, especially the register. Do they make sure that that does not end where they start? And also, Chairperson, the last one. After referring the non-compliant cases to relevant authorities or places, what then? What follow-ups do they make? Because it's not clear. Do they make sure that... Do they make sure that the staff... according to what they as ICD have recommended? Do they make follow-up? Do they get feedback from them? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Two different issues here in your challenges. Police not informing the ICD and the inaccessibility to rural areas. I would like to check whether this inaccessibility to rural areas, the effect of that. What is the cause? Is it because of you don't have transport, or is it because of the areas are vast? And if it's like that, now how do we get reports from those areas? And this, I think, to me, it will show that the statistics you are given here, they may not be 100% because of some areas you may not have covered, and then where there are problems. And I'm also looking at the police not informing you. How will they inform you if you haven't visited those police stations? The other aspect is that of it may not be appearing in this report, in this presentation, is that of firearms, police, members of ICD being deployed in rural areas or in far remote areas or in dangerous areas where the police are fighting and so on. We got the reports in when we investigated that the ordinary investigators didn't have firearms. Yeah, firearms were with headquarters. I just want to put headquarters as well. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members. I will try as much as possible to answer these questions to the best of my ability, and I will ask the assistance of my colleagues also to add some meat on where they are skeletons. Now, the first one, which has been raised by the Chairperson, it was a comment, of course, the issue of non-existence of domestic compliance in the Eastern Cape, where you are alleging that people don't know and it does not exist. Sometimes you don't know how can you engage people who does not even know about it, including the police in particular. I think this one, like what I said, that it is a challenge indeed. But what I've said, when I say from 75 investigators, we're going to have about 110 or so, we are starting with a rank which we call assistant investigator there. It will be a sort of a career path, because you always know when we say ICT, there's no growth in there. But with this in mind, there's a career path. Now, assistant investigators are also going to have policing powers, and are going to be trained in all aspects of domestic violence and policing as a whole. And we are promised there that they are also going to be taken to the academy, police academies, police institutions, to get more training. And this request has been done to our political principal, who is supportive, that he is going to make sure that ICD officials, these junior investigators, will receive the initial training. I am of the view that when this is being implemented, most probably from the 1st of December, we will try to tackle and have people all over to address this issue indeed. Now, there's a question about the awareness campaign, where in some instances our returns, they show that there is zero zero returns. And maybe it's because people don't know as to where are they supposed to go, whether are we partnering with some other stakeholders in order to sensitize and inform people about the existence of the ICD, whether we are partnering with the police. Indeed, we are doing that. We despite the fact that the resources are not enough to deploy our people all over at the same time, but we take advantage of each and every available opportunity. For instance, the invisos in particular, we really rely on them, and the 16-day of activism, we really rely on them. We take advantage of those days to make sure that ICD provincial offices do a thorough campaign in all the provinces. For example, about 2 days ago, I know for sure because I was present in the Eastern Cape in the place called the Somerset East. The ICD was there with the material brochures and a stand where we try to market our services to the people. We take advantage of that because we have to understand that sometimes when people are called by bigger departments where the minister is present, we know that we will pull a lot of crowd there. So we usually take advantage of that, and that's what we are doing. And then also when we got events such as opening of satellite, I'm happy to announce that we had over 2,000 people in Tata, and we also utilized that forum in order to market our services to the people in rural areas. So we indeed tried very hard. And now we have started to utilize the media. Previously, it was a problem because we realized that there was no budget specifically for marketing. And the people did not really understand what is marketing. By marketing, we mean marketing our own services. You find that there was no slot even in radio, local radio. There was no slot by ICD, and that is what we have embarked on. As from now on, there must be budget allocated for marketing of our services, because we realize that we are not known. So we are taking advantage now of radio as well as the media. And I'm sure that in the next maybe two weeks or so, there will be an insert in all the major newspapers, including rural, all the provinces, where we want to make sure there is an insert there, which will in general inform the public what is ICD, where to get ICD, what does ICD do for you. That is a strategy which we want to sensitize our people to know about our service. We agree, we are not that well known, but we are trying very hard to do it. Now, the issue of the researchers, which I have mentioned also here, the femicide by the SAPS and the non-compliance of non-compliance by the SAPS members. By when is it going to be finalized? Is there a time frame or not? I know for sure that as of Monday, that research unit will be in the Eastern Cape, also interviewing people and complying with this research. What I'm expecting is that by the middle of 2008, somewhere July, we will have managed to finalize this research project. And what we do after this project, usually, like what happened in March, we do call our stakeholders, particularly being the police, because they are our biggest stakeholder. We had a workshop with them in Pretoria, the Vegas Park Hotel, where top management of the police were there from the Deputy National Commissioner and the Commissioner. And we engaged with them and tabled to them our findings by this research. And I'm happy to say that they really participated fully and they really agreed with most of the findings which we showed them. And we agree that we'll again meet and see how do we carry forward these findings which we have made, particularly the issue also of non-compliance. Because there, I have to say it here, fortunately, because it's written here, that the beginning, during about February, I came across something which was being done by the SAS, the police management. There is a regulation which made it compulsory for the police officers, if they do not comply with the recommendation of the ICD, they must tell the executive director of the ICD why they do not comply with that. Now, to my surprise, they were busy removing that regulation in the subject. And it has been removed, as I'm talking of now. So, you can see that if you have got a systematic manner or way of making sure that you don't comply with the recommendation of the ICD, then you are heading for problems. And fortunately, I raised this issue in our last workshop, which we were presenting to the SAPs, and said to them, why are you not talking about this thing? Because I'm now aware that you guys have removed it. And they were dumb, and they agreed that they will look at it, and when we meet, they must explain to us what is the way forward. And fortunately, I'm part of the steering committee, which is looking at the SAPs Act. And one of the recommendations by the ICD, we have agreed that this must be returned back to the regulation. The police must inform us why they are not complying or they are not taking our recommendation than simply keeping quiet. Honorable Leifan Vick mentioned the issue of that there is the issue of the quality of the report, the comment that indeed there is a room for improvement on the quality of this report and what is contained there. And indeed, that is true. Like I have earlier mentioned, that we wholeheartedly take your advices and guidance. I'm going to make sure that together with our management, we again revisit this issue to improve more on the quality and what is contained in this report which we present to you. And the issue, as you mentioned, that there are certain issues which you don't see why they are put in this report. Issues are such as rape in custody, because these are not related to domestic violence. Indeed, that is true, because if we don't identify things which are not necessary, they might find that we waste resources such as time and energy and money on looking on things which really are not part of our mandate. We will strive to make sure that we stay away from what really does not concern us in order to put more effort on what you the law requires us to do and what you will also be expecting us to do in that regard. And we appreciate that comment, really. And the issue of place of safety, where complainants come and lodge complaints and the police cannot assist them because there are no place of safety. This is an issue which I can say to this house has been risen several times in the JCP cluster. That it is not only expected that a specific department must be the only department which deal with problems of this nature. There are other role players here, other departments which must play their part, such as the social development, justice, health. These are role players who must also come and play their role part here, and public works. Because the police themselves, on their own, they cannot donate the building, they don't have. But you may expect that perhaps public works can assist. You can expect that justice may also assist, juvenile center, as well as the place of safety where abused spouses can go and get shelter. And these are things which I think you as government can ask, can sensitize other departments, especially the JCP cluster members, to make sure that they sit down and look at how best to make sure that within a cluster of police station, perhaps there is one institution which can be turned as a place of safety. The so-called Tusong Center, which were called multi-center, multi-purpose centers, I think it doesn't, if you can have a dormitory for ladies, dormitory for males also within those places, for temporal shelters they can assist. But as I'm saying, it is indeed a challenge, which I think also ourselves as part of the JCP cluster will sensitize that is the issue which perhaps the police on their own cannot really assist us much. There is a very also important issue where you mentioned uniformity, that our provinces appear that they are not implementing or inspecting or auditing stations in uniformity. Indeed, that is something which you are correct, you have pointed it out. And ourselves also as management recently, we discuss also about this issue, that perhaps indeed this issue we need to come with a certain pro forma whereby it must be distributed to all the provinces. You must all agree that this is how, when you go to a police station, you must inspect this register, you must make sure that this and that is in place uniformly. And I'm glad that you just hit the spot on, because it's exactly one of the issues which causes problem, uniformity. And I'm happy to inform you that we are going to make sure that this thing is implemented immediately as a matter of agency. There need to be uniformity indeed. And the comment that perhaps those members of our staff who go to police stations or to station for some other activities, they must also go there with an additional mandate such as DVA. I think that is a good idea. And moreover, as we are coming with a proposal of these assistant investigators whom are going to be in the rank of constables if you compare with the police, these are the people who must take advantage of now when we train them, that they must also make sure that they are jack of all trades when they go to stations. We also heard your comment as far as the issue of trying to make sure that our report identify clearly and spell out whether this exemption has been initiated by ourselves or by the police management. And we'll make sure that we comply with that. And the issue which has been mentioned, that people perhaps expect the police to respond immediately, and the police are making it as an excuse, or we are also condoning it when we say that our people expect that the police must respond immediately. And you emphasizing that indeed it is their legitimate right to raise such expectations. We fully agree. There is no excuse. The people are expected to get help from the police immediately, because when there is issue of domestic violence, there are possibility of injury, even loss of life. There can't be an excuse whatsoever. The police must respond immediately. And as far as the issue, well, I'm not going to talk much about the issue of difference between our feds and the subs. That is always the case. We are trying to have a harmonious relationship. However, as we all know, being an oversight body, there is no way which you can have a 100% good relationship with the police. You are bound to differ somewhere, somehow. Even if you try to harmonize the relationship, it can't be turned completely to be a relationship which will be in agreement with your faith whatsoever. And we are happy to hear that the chairperson, as well as members, have identified KZN to be trying their best, although that you are thinking perhaps because you were coming from the West Station, which is the Eastern Cape. And maybe that is possible, but we are not going to let this lie down. We will strongly look at this matter urgently with the Eastern Cape, particularly the issue of an incident which happened about 8 kilometers from their office, and without them knowing, it's called much to be desired. The issue of the research unit, Honorable Chair, it is true that you really need to question yourself about its existence and what its advantages thereof. There could be advantages and some advantages, disadvantages. But as I'm saying, there are some of the reports which out of this research we managed to engage the police. Like, as I'm saying, this year we have managed to meet with the police twice with our findings. Perhaps an oversight which needs to be rectified immediately, which I will make sure that it's done, is that this research outcome must also be forwarded to this house for you to see what kind of findings we uncover through this kind of research. Perhaps that will be of assistance. Honorable Daniel spoke about the issue of partnering with Home Affairs. Indeed, Home Affairs is also one of the departments which is always meeting with majority of our citizens. From birth, the only place you are going to be known is Home Affairs, and even when you are dying. And we agree that it will appear that ideally, if there was that relationship between ourselves and Home Affairs, when people go there to whether to issue of identity documents or divorce or whatsoever, they would be in a position to know where to refer these people when this complaint which they are mentioning to them is related to the ICD issue. I think it's the issue of a relationship of referrals. That department must be in a position to know when you are faced with this kind of problem or a question, whom can you refer this individual to? For example, ourselves, I don't know whether it's because of our name called the Independent Complaints Directorate, because it's got nothing to do with the police and policy. We receive so many complaints, which some of them are not related to us. People complain, consumers complain about having been shortchanged, issues which involve the magistracy, Home Affairs, because they think when we say complain and independent, you complain with any complaint to us. But what we have done, we came with certain kind of forms whereby we take down your names, we try to write your summary of your story and give you advice that this is the place where you can go and seek help. It's falling out of our mandate. So I think it's something which needs to be sensitized with other departments. And when we meet in Imbizos, I'll make sure that this is the reason that as government departments, let's make sure that we have got standard forms whereby if you know that this is not my problem, and you can refer to ICD, refer it to ICD, perhaps it will assist also there. And the Honorable Mahoja spoke about the issue of shelters, that if we are aware that the police do not have a place of safety or to shelter the spouses who are abused, therefore, what is the need or what is the use for us to record it down? Yes, it is true that the police do not have always place of shelter. But if we allow that statistic to fall within the cracks and we don't know, the government doesn't know, you as members of this house do not know that they did not comply because they don't have a shelter in their vicinity, we lose track, and we will indeed coming here without statistics, because we have left something which was vitally important for you to know. As to how we can solve it, we are also as a department having our trust that you as the government and as parliament, if we sensitize you with lack of shelter in a specific police vicinity, you will do your part there. It's unfortunate that we are of the view that we cannot let it there slip through the cracks without reporting it. And the question of whether these workshops, do we make sure that it filter down to the foot soldiers in the police stations? I'm happy to announce that we, through our offices, it started here in Durban, fortunately. In Durban, we had requested to the Provincial Commissioner that can't they allow the ICD to have a slot when it comes to police college, when the students are there. Can't you invite ICD to come and give certain lecture as far as domestic violence is concerned, as far as what is the ICD and our mandate? And I'm happy to announce that we got a response from the National Office of the SAPS, the Police Management, have agreed that the ICD must be accommodated in police colleges. And from now on, we can simply pick a phone, speak to the police commissioner. We know that there are intakes of students and they are about to complete. So can you accommodate as we are coming to lecture the students? And this, I think, is going to go a long way in addressing that issue. But on the other hand, we have to agree that you do have some dinosaurs within the SAPS who don't want to hear anything about ICT. But if we take advantage of the younger ones, maybe they will understand our mandate and why, what is ICD in general. The question of whether do we do follow-ups on the exemptions, and which we grant the police, or when the police do not apply for exemption, what do we do as ICD? Yes, we indeed do follow-ups. There's a slight problem which we experienced. It was when there was change in the police structure. We were used to liaise with the area commissioner, and it was easier that because you would go simply to the area commissioner and complain. But now the setup has changed completely. We engage with the provincial commissioner, and it was very far. But I'm told that there is now what is called cluster policing, and we have agreed that the ICD must engage with the cluster police station in order to make follow-ups from the grassroots level of people who do not want to comply with this or to apply for exemption. But as I said, the main problem, which indeed was, I think it was designed to make the ICD more toothless, was the issue of removing from the police regulation that regulation which compelled the police commissioners to apply for to inform the ICD why they must not implement our recommendation. And I'm looking forward that this must come back, because if the police do not apply to us, it means there's nothing which we are going to do. We may recommend, but what are we going to do? They don't inform us. They just leave it like that. I think in this steering committee, as ICD, we are going to make sure that they return back that regulation which they have removed. The question of accessibility to rural areas, whether is it the issue of the vastness of the area, or really what is the problem? There's no doubt. The vastness of the area being serviced by the provincial heads of the provincial offices of the ICD, they are very big. They are servicing very big area. There are so many examples. For example, if we talk about provinces like Limpopo, our offices are in Polokwane. But you have got places as far as Bush, Park Ridge, you have got places as far as Musina. It's quite vast. And that is one of the things whereby our investigators, they usually sleep out, because they have to travel for more than 4 or 5 kilometers to go and receive a complaint in Musina. and you expect those people to drive back to Polokwane, it's a serious challenge. And the only way for us to escape this challenge is when we continue to open the satellite as we are doing now, in order to solve the issue of accessibility. Now, the question of whether, how will the police apply for exemption when we do not go to them? Like I have said, there are so-called cluster police stations. Previously we had area commissioners' offices and so forth. So the question of exemption application thereof, it's not necessarily that the ICD must go to them to request them and beg them to apply for exemption. The laws make it clear that the police themselves, proactively, they must inform the ICD. And it is their effort when they do not do that. But ourselves, because we need to be proactive, we inform their superiors, such as the police commissioner and the area commissioner, that police station so and so do not apply for exemption. Perhaps what we need to do more is to amplify our activity as far as that is concerned. But indeed, the police do not expect us, or they must not expect us to go to them. They must come to us because the law says they must apply to us, and they have got no room, they have got no reason for them to sit down and not comply with the law. The question of the investigating officers not having firearms, and that some of them were told to return firearms to National Office. What I know about this issue is that the investigating officers also throughout, they are also expected to comply with the new Firearm Control Act of 2000. That even if you are given policing powers, you cannot simply be issued with a firearm. You must satisfy the requirements of the Act. Competency certificate, training certificate, you must make sure that you have those things before you have the firearm in your hand. So those who are given policing powers expect that immediately we must dispatch firearms to them, and they must go armed with guns and so forth. But they have been told that, guys, unless you comply with the law, there is no way in which you will have a firearm, because that's what the law is saying. It's unfortunate that it has to be done like that. But then, what do we do ourselves as National Office to make sure that our investigating officers comply with the legislation? In the past, we have got a list of accredited institutions which offer firearm training courses, and we encourage them that from provinces they must go to the nearest accredited institution, get training, and when they complied, then there will be issued with firearms. But I realize that some of the people do not want even to carry firearms. They say they are civilian oversight. So as civilian oversight, they feel that they are immune from bullets, I don't know. But I know that even if they are civilian oversight, once you've got policing powers, it means you must also be armed at all times, because you can go to a dangerous territory. But I will take it upon ourselves to make sure that all our officers do comply with this. But we all know that some police officers, even they know, for example, that there is danger, they don't even wear bulletproof. And people are killed day in, day out, without bulletproof, but their own duty. So it's the same with our IOs. They don't want firearms, but they know they're going to arrest people who are also perhaps involved in dangerous circumstances. But it's no excuse. We'll sensitize it and make sure that we go to the bottom of it and rectify it as soon as possible. And the question of Now, if the police or in the where we say responded or a suspect in domestic violence, firearm has not been confiscated by the police and there is a complaint that which has been lied by the other, laid by the spouse, that this person is threatening her or him, what then happens? The Domestic Violence Act makes it very serious indeed to fail to respond to this issue. I know police officers who have been fired and other centers for failure to confiscate firearms, only to find that when they make a U-turn from the house of the complainant, when they reach the police station, the police officer has been shot. They found that because the firearm was not confiscated. But then, as we are saying as ICD, our role is to make sure that we make recommendations to the police management. And we expect the police management to implement our recommendations, which are reasonable. It's only unfortunate that sometimes when we make these recommendations, the police management do not comply, because they will ask you, you say we must take his firearm. When we take his firearm, then what now? You pay him for not working. He must go and stand at the gate of the police station or supervise the awaiting trial prisoners or the prisoners who are about to leave. Now you've got this problem of saying, it appears that people wait until there is a serious consequence, then they intervene, because it would be better to immediately confiscate the firearm and leave it to the court, because the Domestic Violence Act says the firearm must be confiscated immediately, and it's the magistrate who must decide, or the court, what must happen with firearms. But it's unfortunate that our recommendations are not being followed. And I hope that perhaps somehow, somewhere, our recommendations are going to be at. As an example, it's just an example to the members of the House. The Nigerian government, for example, they've got a body which is the same like the ICD. Well, we do inspire that perhaps one day we can operate like that. There, the recommendation of the body, the civilian body of this nature, is highly recommended. They make sure they comply. It's the law. The law says you must comply. If they recommend it, you must comply, unless there are reasonable reasons which makes you not to. They go as far as even if you are to be promoted from the rank, one rank to another, there must be a report from the ICD or from their body there. What is your view on this? Do you know this person? Do you have a record of this person? Those are examples of certain countries where they take it very serious in order to make sure that they avoid this kind of nature. Maybe one day also we have such things. I think up to so far I'll leave it there and maybe quickly ask my deputy to add anything if I've left.
I think so far you attempted to respond to all those questions brilliantly, so because I was expecting the managers of the program to respond, but I'm impressed as I discovered that you responded on their behalf on all the questions that came from members. But I'm not expecting you to do the same when we deal with the annual report. They will have to respond on their program. You raised a lot of issues that I think they are of a very serious nature. The model that you spoke about, the cluster police model that you spoke about, in order for you to be able to merge into that model, you'll have to get more staffing in your provinces. Because by day, the population, the police are growing, the number are growing by day, whereas your numbers are not growing in the provinces. So in order for you then to be able to fulfill your mandate, you really have to consider very seriously in the right training on these assistant investigators you just spoke about. And also thanks for the clarity about the firearms.
Because, I mean, they know, everyone knows, you can't possess a firearm if you're not, you don't comply. You must go through the processes that are required by the law before you can, you know. But to us, it was said, I not a that, you know, but I understand now. I understand now that we agree with you. You can't let them possess firearms if they don't meet the requirements. Thank you very much, then, acting this.
Before you let me disturb you, there's one question I was, because of time, I was going to allow maybe not them to respond on that one, but it's of concern to me. I ask a question of increase of police officers who are perpetrators of domestic violence. If you can maybe elaborate on that.
Thank you, ma'am. We, yes, there are serious cases where police use their firearms to perpetrate violence against their spouses. If I may, I've got it here. We've just put it in. It's part of the past report. What do we mean? We mean here where members assault their spouses, even to the extent of killing them. These are the numbers. If you look at these numbers, this slide, you'll see that during this entire period from January 2005 to date, 17 cases, 33% of the cases happened in the Northwest. But primarily those relate to assault and to a smaller extent, actually, femicide, murdering the spouses. But in KwaZulu-Natal, for instance, those cases there, if I'm not mistaken, all of them relate to basically the members killing their spouses. And assault on members of the domestic relationship, their families, their, yeah. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I think next time I would like to see us sitting here doing three reports at once. Let us comply. Let us send the report or release reports as required by the law. Every 6 months, one report as required by the law. Otherwise, really, it will make members' time and my time and my life very difficult. As you can see that our program is so full, the program is so full, but we had to do this thing because we don't have time to deal with them, because the only time we'll be having from now onwards is next year, February next year, not even January, February next year, because in January we'll be dealing with some other issues, and then sometimes January are not even back, it's even back in February. So really next time try your best, that this report that you said that it has not been referred to Parliament to us now, that is the first term of the year, that is January to June. Yeah, the sooner we get that one, the better. So whilst you are busy then doing that, you prepare, then in January you prepare the one for the current time we're in now, that is June to December, in order for us to be on time. Thank you very much to members of Parliament. I know that I had that idea. I can't open for another question now. Can we give it for leave it for Friday next week? That humbly so, please. That let us keep it Friday next week. You are number one in my list. Please. Yeah, we've come then to the end of the meeting. Thank you very much, EG and your team. And thanks to members of Parliament. I know that some of us are supposed to be in classes now. We have school here. We are very much highly